Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Adapting. We are recording on October 13th, 2022, which is just a couple of weeks before the Israeli elections, or just a couple of weeks before the next Israeli elections, I should say. Today's conversation with Dr. Noam Weissman of Open Door Media and someone who produces many videos under the Unpacked banner, which we will link to in our show notes, is a perfect guest for me to explore the following topic with. And that is really the question of why on earth should diaspora Jews care about Israeli elections? So it starts off with a pretty mundane conversation in some ways about why the election should matter, but then it goes off in all different ways and all different tangents about why Israel education and why Israel should actually matter in the lives of Jews today and how the Israeli elections can be used by Jewish educators to inculcate some sort of attachment with Jews from the America, Jews from around the world, to what's taking place in Israel. What's really important as you begin to explore is this is not a political discussion. We don't talk about what sides or what viewpoints people should have, but we really do talk about this level of engagement, which Noam talks about, that in order to be a full sense of Jew in the world today, that a connection, attachment, some sort of relationship with Israel ends up being pretty integral in the whole scheme of things. So stay tuned and listen to the episode. I'm sure you'll find it interesting, provocative, controversial, informative, all of those things, perhaps most of all, inspiring in my conversation with Noam today.
This is Adapting, the Future of Jewish Education, a podcast from the Jewish Education Project, where we explore the big questions, challenges, and successes that define Jewish education. I'm David Breifman.
So shortly, Israeli citizens will be heading to the voting booths. Well, they'll be heading to the voting booths for the fifth time in 4 years. And the question I really wanted to ask today and focus this episode on is, why should American Jews, and specifically American Jewish youth, care about the elections taking place in Israel? And I think you'll understand why I've decided to open this topic up for today's conversation, and specifically why I've decided that today's guest, Dr. Noam Weissman of Open Door Media, is the perfect person to help explore this topic further with me. So welcome, Noam, to today's episode of Adapting.
David, thanks so much for having me. Honored to be on the show.
So I want to begin by telling a bit of a story about something that I once did as an educator. And looking back on it now, I sort of like kicking myself as to why I thought this was actually a good thing to do. So I'm working in a high school in Australia, and I spent a bit of time during my stint there studying in Israel. There were Israeli elections being held at the time. And myself and the head of the Judaic Studies department of the school thought it would be a great idea for me to broadcast live from Jerusalem the results of the Israeli election over the loudspeaker system in the school, so all the kids would be inspired by the Israeli elections taking place all the way across the world. Now, in hindsight, it didn't work. No one really cared. And to be frank, I sort of like can't really blame them. Like, it's sort of like a weird thing to have tried to do in the first place. So I want to use that just as an entry point to begin the conversation today. So why should Israeli elections matter to Jewish kids in the United States and around the world today?
My first answer to that question, David, is somewhat of a cynical answer, but I kind of mean it seriously. And that is that maybe they shouldn't care so much about it. But the reason they definitely should care about it is on our end, as from the perspective of the educator, for the perspective of the funder, of the philanthropist. If we're going to be asking our young people to represent Israel, if we're going to be asking our young people to represent Zionism, and if they don't know what Israel represents, and they don't know what Zionism represents, then there's something a little bit silly about that whole game, about that whole charade. So I'm not sure that we necessarily need them to care about Israeli elections, but if we do want them to care about Israel and care about Zionism, then a great foray into that, great entree into that has to be the story and the topic of Israeli elections. People love to talk about how Israel's the only democracy in the Middle East, and this is an example of something where maybe a bit too democratic, a bit too many votes, too much voting. But here's how I see it. I think there are probably three or four different ways that the Israeli elections can be an incredible way to do good Jewish and good Israel education. So the first way, the reason it's super duper important, is if you want to get to know the real Israel, not the mythical Israel, but the real Israel, then you have to look at the Israeli elections. One of the funniest things that I could think of, David, and you could imagine this and you know about this probably, is if, could you imagine if in the United States of America, you had Aaron Burnett and Wolf Blitzer, and in the midst of listening to Wolf Blitzer and Aaron Burnett, all of a sudden SNL came on as part of it? That's what happens in the Israeli elections. right? The first thing is to understand there's Eretz Nehederet. There's a satire that exists. There's a humor that exists in Israeli society around these elections. And that's really interesting to be aware of. So you get to see a real Israel. You also get to see an Israel that has all different segments. You see an Israel that has the right wing, the left wing, the inability to define who is right and who is left, because someone who's right on national, like Yisrael Beitenu, may be left on religious. Right? So there's so many different examples of different political streams within Israel. And if you want to get a sense of what real Israel looks like, then the best way to do that, I think, is to see the merits, the avodah, all the different groups that exist, the Yesh Atid that exists within the Israeli elections. So it gives you a sense of what's going on there. A second thing that I think is really important to understanding about the Israeli elections, why it's just a great way to learn about Israel and Israel education, is literacy. I recently spoke to a lower school principal, and maybe this resonates with some of you listening today. And I asked her, who is the prime minister of Israel right now? Who is the prime minister of Israel? She looked at me. She's incredibly educated, incredibly smart. And she looked at me and goes, I have no idea. So maybe it's a little bit of an unfair question, perhaps, but because, you know, Yair Lapid's only there for a little bit. But the reality is that, again, like I said earlier, if we want our young people to connect with Israel, to care about Israel, we have to have a certain literacy. I don't know if it was Amos Oz or Micha Goodman. One of them said a quote like this, like, one basic precondition of joining any conversation is having literacy, right? So it's very hard to have a conversation about Israel if we don't know the basic players in the space. A third reason that I think this is just so darn important, and this is going to sound silly, but maybe it's serious, is it's fun. It's fun. The Israeli elections is an unbelievably fun way to learn about Israel. Their ads, I'm cracking up thinking about some of Shas's ads. They're funny. They're very funny. They don't take themselves so seriously the same way that the U.S. does. It's a totally different feel to it. They're poking fun at each other. They're making jokes about, like, hammering each other on the head. They're making Jewish jokes about, like, crazy things that you would never imagine. And so this is such a good way to get a real sense of Israeli society, to see how Israel is in many ways divided on many issues, without a doubt, but also allows you the fourth reason, I'll end with this, which is you get to see what they deeply care about. If I ask you, David, what's the number one thing that Israelis care about right now? I would imagine that many Americans would say something like, you know, the two-state solution or security or defense. The truth is most Israelis are relatively on the same page about that. You know what they care about before anything else? 44% of Israelis care about the high cost of living. That's what's on their mind. So if we want young people to connect to Israel, the way to do that is to have them connect to Israelis and to get a sense of what it is that they deeply care about. So this is a plug. One of the things that we're doing, you're going to have the link to this, is we're creating subtitles to all of these ads from Shas to Meretz that I'd love to include in the show notes, because it's just, you have access. And when you have access, you'll see why I think they're so funny and why I think they're such a good way to learn about real Israel. So my colleague Avi Posen created these. And so I just want to, you know, make sure that everyone sees them because they're awesome.
Okay. So you've opened up a whole plethora of issues that we can go into, we can talk further about, and we will. But there's something that you said really interestingly in the beginning, which I don't want to let go of. And you said, if the purpose of Israel education is to have young people represent Israel or the Zionist enterprise or something to that effect, I'm really interested in the word represent and what that connotates for our listeners. So when you say that, what do you actually mean by saying that Jewish educators expect young people to represent Israel? And is that really a fair expectation or burden to be putting on our young people today?
I'm not sure it is a fair burden, but it is the burden that we place on them. And so because of that, and here's what I mean by that, David, to be specific, we ask all of our young people to go to college campuses and to do the following. When they say occupied, you say disputed. When they say, you know, Israel's born in sin, you prove them wrong. When they say whatever the topic is about Israel, your job is to get out there, be on the front lines and prove what it is that you need to prove, whatever that is. And what I'm saying is, I think that that's a very unfair request, probably in general, but specifically with regard to Israel, especially if they don't ask for it. So if we are going to be asked to do that, if funders, philanthropists, educators, we want our young people to be on college campuses and in the professional workspace, caring deeply about these things, my argument's a very simple one. Cool, great, go for it. But they have to have literacy. There's a little bit of snobbiness, perhaps, in that argument, perhaps. But I believe that skill acquisition and cultural literacy do not need to collide with one with the other, and you can have both. And if you're going to ultimately be asking art, then that's what we all do. We want our young people on college campuses and beyond to feel strong and confident about their views on Israel. How do we possibly do that without also demanding literacy?
All right, so I know you and I have had this discussion, debate, argument many times before, but let's analyze who the we is here that you're saying the we want us to go out there and do this. I remember I was sitting in a hall, and Arik Sharon, then the Prime Minister of Israel, said his number one desire, ambition for the Jewish student population of the United States and the world was that they would become, in his language, the foot soldiers of Israel on campuses throughout the world. Foot soldiers. He literally used the military analogy to describe what their role should be. Now, you and I have both been on the discussion about what constitutes Israel education and what constitutes this term called Hasbara, which loosely translates as explanation, which more facetiously translates as propaganda. But your answer sounds like you're advocating or you're suggesting that the purpose of Israel education is to create spokespeople for the land of Israel or the people of Israel or the state of Israel. I'm not so sure that's where most educators feel comfortable today.
I would say the opposite. I'm certainly not intending to say that. I'm saying the following. I want to say it clearly. I am saying if it is the case that the world out there wants people to be spokespeople, the Arik Sharons out there, the big foundations, then it's an if then. If that is the case, then there has to be literacy. There has to be education. There has to be a diverse way of seeing things. They have to make sure to do that. Now, if you ask me, hey, Noam, what's your goal in Israel education as opposed to Hasbara? I'd love to talk about that.
So give it to me. What's your explanation? And if it's not literacy or if it's not Hasbara, like, what is your approach? Because I know you do also care about the content of this subject as well.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I care a ton about it. So one of your favorite educators is one of my favorite educators. His name is Paulo Freire. And I would say that when I learned what his approach was to education, and the way I'll frame it is like this, it's problem posing versus what he calls banking education, right? So the way I'm seeing it is it's more along a spectrum than as a binary, okay? And the methodology is what's going to really matter here. Paulo Freire would say, you want a good educational experience. What that looks like is pose a problem and then allow the young person, allow the student to engage in it, to develop solutions to the problem, to figure something out, to construct an answer, as opposed to the banking approach to education, which is I have all the information and I'm going to deposit it. And I'm going to sit over here and I'm going to tell you how to think about it. I'm going to get you to that point. What Israel education is trying to do, I think, is different than Israel advocacy. It's different than Hasbara. Israel education is to say, let's treat the student not as an object, but a subject. Let's make sure that the student has what I'll call agency. Let's allow the student to grapple with the question. And when we do that, we are not demanding that they come out with some sort of very specific prescriptive answer to those earlier questions that I laid out earlier. And the world we live in, David, is a world that, and this is, I certainly see this all the time, there is an advocacy surplus and an inquiry deficit. And what we want to be doing much more of in education is inquiring more, piquing curiosity, getting people to consider different ways to solve a problem. And the Israeli elections, just going back to that for a minute here, is such a great way to do that. See, the Israeli elections is it's a cunning educational approach. And what I mean by that is what you're able to do with Israeli elections is to say to young people, if you look at the Israeli society, you could find yourself either as a Meretz Jew or as a more right-wing Jew, a Meretz representing the left and the national religious community representing more the right, perhaps, and saying to them within that, you have a place within Israeli society. You don't have to think about these historical questions in one specific way. You don't have to think about policies in one specific way. And if we do that, then young people will say, Oh my God, I also have a seat at the table. I also have a voice that can be heard because the Israeli Knesset has representation of people like me.
So we're playing this out in real time now, this conversation, but I can imagine, say, you're in your high school situation and, you know, Noam taught in high schools for many years, so he's playing it out in real time. There are several possible responses that a student could have to the pedagogy or the inquiry approach that you're putting out there. One is, for sure, I identify with this political party, and if I was in Israel right now, that's who I would vote for, and you'd be fine with that. The second possible approach could be, Well, I actually have an opinion about Israeli politics, which is not represented in the Israeli Knesset, whether I am too right-wing because I have been excluded for various reasons, or I'm too progressive and I don't believe Israel has a right to exist. And on that front, I'd ask you the question, like, are there parameters to what Israel education, you know, should actually involve? But then there's a third response, which I guess is the essence to this conversation, is the kid who says, I don't care. Like, it's so far away. It is so distant from me. This country, well, you can talk about having choice, but I really, this has no application to my life whatsoever. And I'm really interested in this third response because I want to explore the question with you of, does the Israeli election or do the results of the Israeli election have any actual impact on the lives of Jews in the diaspora today or in the lives for young people today? And I'm not sure the answer to that is certain, but I'd love to hear your response to all three of those possibilities. The first one you've given, but the second and third ones, yeah.
I love that framing because you and I think probably see this similarly, which is that I think the third framing is much more challenging than the second framing. Right. The second framing is this idea that, you know, I perhaps have an antagonistic feeling towards Israel, but that person has a deep feeling towards Israel. I don't think that we can program how people feel about things, how people think about things. I do think that we could provide tools for how to think about things, how to think about Israel, and provide, I think, the literacy, the content, the background, and to come at it from a place of what I like to call, you know, goosebumps with complexity. And I think that if you have goosebumps, you feel deeply for Israel. You have an emotional attachment to Israel, hugging and wrestling, whatever metaphor you want to use, right? I think that that second student, I think that they typically can identify with that. The third student that you're describing is the student who, you know, I like to think about the challenge of, it's difference of opinion is great. Indifference is really challenging. Apathy is really challenging to deal with. It's not antipathy that's the challenge. So I think that there's something about Israel and Zionism, which is needs to be not about Israel and Zionism. The way I like to think about Israel and Zionism, which can help students really get jazzed about Israel, care about Israel, want to learn more about Israel, is to think about it in this one way. There's a verse in Esther that is, it's, you know, I want to make t-shirts of this, David, and I'm going to. Today's my birthday, and I'm asking my wife to make this for my birthday. It's basically, I want everyone to be what I call a 4:14 Jew. A 4:14 Jew. In Esther, in the fourth chapter, in the 14th verse, she's asked the question. And the question is, are you going to go out and do something for the Jewish people? Now, you might not, it might not work out for you. You may not succeed. Not everything might work out, but will you put your neck on the line? Will you go for it? Right? That's what Mordechai asks Esther. And she goes for it. She says, yes. It's not about Israel. It's about, do you want to be proactive? Do you want to be part of the story? Do you want to cultivate something? And I think that what young people struggle with is just languishing, is just kind of continuing on. It's much harder to be Isaac continuing than it is to be Abraham, which is cultivating. It's a much, much, much more difficult task. By the way, David, it's why I named I and my wife named our son Eyal Isaac. To have the strength of Isaac, because I deeply believe in that. But I also know how difficult it is. So to be a 4:14 Jew is to say, get up and do, get up and go. I don't think that you could be a complete, have a healthy, full relationship with one's Jewish identity without including Israel in that. I want to tell you one interesting story from Israel. Hanan Porat, who is a very famous religious Zionist, very controversial figure, and, you know, he's one of these, the great founders of Gush Emunim, of the Israeli settler movement. And he was in the Beit Midrash. He was learning Torah one day when his teacher, Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Cook, overheard one of his debates. And the debate was, if you have Torah, people, or land, what wins out? Of those three, what wins out? Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Cook heard them debating this. What's most important, Torah, people, or land? And Tzvi Yehuda Cook, Rav Cook's son, said, very simple, we are concerned with shleimut. We are concerned with wholeness. That's the reality. That's the answer. So to me, the question, like, we have to figure this out. It's our task to figure this out. And to be a completely healthy Jew, I think, combines nationality and religion to different degrees, and they both have to go hand in hand.
Okay, before I forget, in our show notes for today's episode, we are going to link both to Noam and Open Door's video about the Israeli elections, but also to his article about the 414 Jew, which I think is a really impressive piece as well. But I think, Noam, you've possibly said one of the more audacious ideological, maybe controversial statements that we've heard for a while on this podcast, and that is, you can't be a complete Jew in the world today without some sort of relationship to the land, people, or state of Israel. And that's a pretty dogmatic statement. Maybe not unexpected from someone who calls himself a Zionist, but you and I both know many Jews who lead pretty happy lives as Jews who don't have this relationship. So just go at it one more time for us so we're totally clear here on what your understanding is of the role of Israel for Jewish life in the diaspora today.
I never said my goal is to make everyone happy. That's never been my goal as an educator. I think it's wonderful. I think happiness is great, but that's not the goal of Jewish education. That's not the goal of Israel education. By the way, I have an article on happiness as well. You should check it out. But in all seriousness, that's not the way I see it. I see the goal of Jewish education and the goal of Israel education to be this great opportunity to cultivate passions and to have a wholeness and a relationship with one's story and with one's heritage. And it's very simple. I just don't see that being possible without Israel, now that Israel exists. Listen, you could be part of the Satmar sect. You can be part of Satmar Hasidim. And they have a deep, deep relationship with religion. They care deeply about the Torah. They care deeply, by the way, about Chesed. They do. They do wonderful things. But there's a whole part of their religious identity that I think is sacrificed when it doesn't also connect to the nation, connect to the people. And to have a seat at the table, I just think that it means having this notion of caring about the other. Now, there's a word for that in Judaism. It's called arevut, right? This notion that we are the guarantors for the other. That has always been part of the Jewish people. We're not known as Dat Yehudit. We're not known as the Jewish religion. We're known as Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel, the people of Israel. And we're going to see things differently. We always see things differently. That's fine. Look at the Israeli elections. Different perspectives. Not just different, but radically different ways to view the world. But ultimately, you have to, if you're going to be part of the story, Israel is at the center of that. If for no other reason than 7 million Jews live in Israel right now, and 15.3 million Jews are in the world. When Israel represents 45% of world Jewry, then that means that they are a critical part of the story as we see it today.
Now, I'm wondering if you see an inherent tension with that argument and the argument you made earlier about Paulo Freire's notion of education, because here you do have a certain principle that you do want to bank inside or deposit inside the banks of our children, but yet you've also espoused this theory that they should be allowed to reach their own conclusions and methods of inquiry.
Yeah, inquiry can lead in various different ways. And those ways, we have to pay a lot of attention to as educators. We have to be considerate of those and care about those and see what emerges out of those. I don't agree with Freire necessarily about his ultimate conclusion. I certainly don't view it as relativistic. Like, you know, the difference between relativism and pluralism, the way I see it, is that relativism says I'm right about everything and you're right about everything and we could just move on with the day. I think pluralism looks at it differently. Pluralism would say something like, I think I'm right about this. And I think you're wrong about this. We both have opinions on this, but we both have a seat at the table. And that's good. We both have a seat at that same table. So with Freire, I much prefer to err on the side of piquing curiosity, posing problems, of letting young people grapple with tradition and coming up with something. I think that that will win the day as a methodology. It's not that I view it as, you know, Torah from God to Moses, but I view it as a methodologically the best way to get people to care deeply and to invest themselves in it. I see no other method of getting young people to care about anything, frankly. We cannot tell them what to think. Hanan Alexander from years ago wrote this article, which I love. He's a professor at the University of Haifa, I think. David, you probably know better than I do. But he wrote this article on mature Zionism. And it had such an impact on me. Because what he said, and this is like for all educators to think about deeply, is there's a difference between being Euclidean, geometric, being fully objective, and being objective with a point of view. There are some boundaries. Not everything goes. And educational institutions need to choose that for themselves. What I'm basically suggesting, though, is widen that a little bit. cultivate that a little bit more. Allow young people to see themselves in what it is you're trying to teach. If you're just going to tell them that there's one way to view it, they will rebel. So if you want to invite that rebellion, the best way to do that is to tell them, here's what to think.
So I know the premise of today's conversation was talking about why we think youth in the diaspora should care about Israeli elections. And we're talking about it as educators who have worked in this field for a long period of time. There's something also deeply, for me at least, personal about this conversation as well. And I remember quite clearly what it was like being a Jewish educator teaching in a Jewish day school in Australia at the time of Yitzhak Rabin's assassination. And I remember coming into the classroom, this is a classroom of seventh grade kids, right? So they're 12, 13 year olds on the Monday morning after the assassination. Before I could even begin to explain to them why this was such a traumatic event, both for me personally, but also for Israel in general, I started weeping in class. But I remember distinctly this one kid in class just laughing at me, right? This 12-year-old boy, I remember exactly where he was sitting, just laughing at me. And the basic premise behind the laughter was like, why on earth do you care so much about this country? Like, and what possible relevance does it have to me? And as an educator and someone who grew up in a Zionist home and a Zionist youth movement, that was a really traumatic feeling for me. But it also was apparent to me that I had not yet done my job conveying why something was so important to me and why it could be or should be, ought to be, language that we've used in other episodes, important for the youth of today. And I feel like if I walked into a classroom today, crying about something as traumatic as that would be met with even more disdain or more difference than what's taking place. And that's why this topic is both deeply personal for me, but I think needs to be illustrative for other educators. So like, I mean, I want to hear how you respond to that sort of story. I'm sure it's not completely foreign to you in some of the settings you've worked in.
I mean, I remember when Rabin was assassinated, also different stage in our lives. I was 10 years old and it was Saturday night. And I remember just my parents were in the basement. My older brother, Hanan, and I were in the basement and we were watching Walker, Texas Ranger. And I remember my parents walking down the stairs, like crying, tears coming down their face. And forever that image. And I didn't have to understand much about Rabin. I didn't know about Oslo. I didn't know about, you know, his role in the Six-Day War in 67. I didn't know about 48. I didn't know about the incredible role that he had in shaping the story of Israel. I just knew that my parents were incredibly sad. I just knew that something made an impression on them. And that was enough for me, frankly, that heart-to-heart moment was enough for me to care about it. And so what you said really does resonate. I don't think that you took a political position that was somehow inappropriate. You, I think, as an educator and hearing that story, David, I think that what you did is you showed the Jewish kids in Australia that a Jewish person who I presume you never met, a Jewish leader who you never met in Israel, thousands of miles away, mattered to you. And as an educator, if you could demonstrate to your students that something like that matters to you, that'll penetrate their hearts. Now, you could debate whether or not that matters. I say that matters.
So without preempting the final question, I want to ask you, Noam, like I've asked all of my guests now for the last few years of this Adapting series, who is an educator or educators in your life that have made a tremendous impact on who you are?
So I could give a trite answer and talk about, you know, my second and third grade teacher, Mrs. Shulman, because, you know, not the intellectual, the academic, the graduate school stuff. I could definitely go that route. And the reason I'd go with Mrs. Shulman is because she was like this 4'9" woman who was just, who just cared so much about me and my classmates. And I remember how she made us feel. You know, it's that Maya Angelou quote. And I will always cherish the way Mrs. Shulman made me feel. You could get emotional when you think about your second and third grade teacher who made their students feel this way. And I certainly do with Mrs. Shulman. And then I go to my university days and I think about Rabbi J.J. Schachter. And what J.J. Schachter taught me how to do is basically how to walk and chew gum at the same time. How to think deeply about something and be committed to it at the same time. That was a really powerful educational experience for me. But as I think that you intuited, David, I think ultimately, without a doubt, it's my parents. Without a doubt, it's the way my father and my mother raised me to, you know, be incredibly passionate about everything and to be incredibly empathic at the same point. Now, I don't know that I do a great job of that as a person. I don't know I do a great job of that as an educator, but I know that that is my North Star.
So Noam, thank you so much for taking the time to join with me and to be with us on this episode. And the truth is, at the end of this discussion, I don't know how it's going to land with educators today. Is it going to make them want to teach about the Israeli elections more? Is it going to want to make them ignore it more or less? I'm not really sure how it's going to land, but I do know the conversation that we've had right now is one which says decisions like that need to be made with intentionality and need to be made with knowledge of what the stakes are. I really appreciate just you being here and sharing with us your opinions and your thoughts and making myself think more deeply about this issue. So thank you very much. Really appreciate the time you spent with us today.
David, thank you so much. And if I could end with one quote from one of my favorite rebbes, his name is Tupac Shakur. And what Tupac would say is that we get so caught up in school being a tradition that we stop using school as a learning tool. And this is such a great learning tool, the Israeli elections. I strongly recommend every single person to use this as a great learning moment. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much, Noam. It's been a real pleasure to have you on today's episode. As always, it was produced by my colleagues, Dina Nussenbaum and Gabriel Weinstein. The show's executive producers are myself, Karen Cummins, and Nessa Lieben. And our show, as always, is engineered and edited by Nathan J. Vaughan of NJV Media. We will be linking to a lot of the references made in today's show on our show notes today, and I urge you to have a look at some of the articles and the videos that Noam and his team at Open Door have produced over time. If you enjoyed this edition of Adapting, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and even better, share it with a friend, share it with a colleague, share it with someone that you know these issues matter with a lot. To learn more about the Jewish Education Project, please visit us at jewishedproject.org, where you can learn more about our organization. And as always, we are a proud partner of UJA Federation of New York. Thank you for listening, and happy birthday, Noam.